Welcome back to the program. Certainly one of the stars of the 2010 World Series was Giants pitcher Tim Lincecum, a pitcher as unique and unusual as the city he plays for. The question is, who is this 26-year-old phenom making $13 million a year, and will 2010 be the apogee of his career or simply the beginning of a career that ends in Cooperstown? We're going to talk about this today with my guest, Jonathan Mahler. He's been with us before. He's a contributing writer to the New York Times. His article, Little Big Man, was the cover story in T Magazine this past Sunday. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you here. One of the things that comes across powerfully in your story is really that Lincecum is really like a big overgrown kid in many ways.
Yeah, that is right. And I think, you know, in many ways, I think a lot of professional athletes are certainly professional athletes at that point in their career. I mean, he's just in his mid-20s. But I think what's interesting about Lincecum is that you know, he's not ashamed to show it. So, you know, he was perfectly happy to spend time with me, have me hang around his apartment, and you know, he is what he is, and he's not trying to project a different sort of image.
And it even relates, though, to the way he approaches the game. I mean, one of the points you make is that so many other athletes in baseball, and pitchers in particular, have this elaborate ritual they go through. They're very unapproachable on game day, but Lincecum is really just a pretty natural guy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he just he's sort of I mean, last year was actually the first year that he had some real struggles, but he just sort of has this kind of carefree attitude, and he's just a pure natural athlete. I don't think he's ever worked terribly hard to stay in shape or needed to. I think he just has this kind of preternatural ability to go out there and throw the ball hard and make it do what he wants it to do, and he has never really given it too much thought. He just kind of goes out and does it. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the naturalness, the way it has always been easy for him. I mean, in high school and the way he came up into the majors, and then when he confronted a little bit of problems last August.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, the one kind of recurring obstacle for him, of course, was his size growing up. So, you know, he was always small. I mean, he didn't hit 5 feet until I think his sophomore year in high school. So he was a little guy, and so there were always kind of doubts about him because of that. But you know, as soon as people saw him pitch, you know, beginning at a very early age, those doubts were pretty quickly put to rest. So so he just, you know, was this kind of natural, and once he had kind of proven that to the world and at all these different levels. I mean, first in the Pac-10 at the University of Washington, and then very briefly in the Giants minor league system, where he spent, you know, a few weeks, and then of course very quickly at the major league level. It just all worked very kind of smoothly for him until last year, when he started to get hit for the first time, you know, and for the first time, I think, started to have some doubts about his own abilities. And, you know, and of course, that's always a dangerous place for athletes to go. I mean, they rely so much on confidence and kind of being able to get out there and know that you know, in the case of pitchers anyway, that they can get people out. And, you know, once you start wondering whether you can get people out, and you start thinking a little too much about your what you're doing, your motion, et cetera, that's often when people start to get into trouble, and that's I think that compounded his problems last year as well.
What's impressive about it, though, is how quickly he was able to turn it around. That
yep.
He didn't allow those doubts and all of those things that were natural for him to have to really destroy him for a long period of time. I mean, very different than his teammate Barry Zito, for example.
That's right. That's right. It is. That's a good point. I mean, he really did. In the end, it was you know, it's really just a matter of weeks. I mean, it was a number of weeks, and it came at a critical time in the season, as Giants fans will remember certainly. And I think the fact that he is a small guy, that he has an unusual looking delivery, probably made it, you know, from the perception of fans, made it that much worse, because they felt, oh, you know, okay, here it is. Well, it's over now for Lincecum. as opposed to, had he been a guy with a more conventional-looking windup, a bigger guy, people might have been willing to kind of give him a little more rope. He really did sort of come back pretty quickly, and I think he did so, as he sort of explained to me, in part just because he had to sort of accept that he was struggling, and that happens. Pitchers struggle, and it happens to everybody. And his pitching coach, David Geddy, told him that you're going to struggle at some point, and that time had come. And rather than taking those struggles as kind of an occasion to start questioning what you do, you have to just kind of work through it, just pitch through it, keep believing in yourself, keep doing what you've always done, and go out there and try to get people out. And that's what he did, and it worked. He righted himself.
How has he dealt with fame and celebrity and money?
Yeah. in terms of money, he seems to have spent at least some of it on this penthouse apartment in Seattle.
Right.
But actually, I don't think it was even that much money, particularly relative to the $13 million that he makes. He seems really, one of the things that I actually really enjoyed about him is the most of the professional athletes that I've interviewed and dealt with in the past, they really are very consciously kind of projecting an image, and they're very aware of their value as product sponsors, and they've been sort of coached on how they're supposed to behave and what they're supposed to say and what they're not supposed to say. And Lincecum is just kind of himself, and it's sort of it's refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Who does he trust? Who does he listen to? You talk about his relationship with his father, which is pretty serious.
He's very close to his father, and I think clearly that's the guy he trusts. I mean, I think he also is still close to some of his childhood friends. He goes back to Seattle. He chose to buy a place there, not in San Francisco. He spent the off season out there, and he's certainly, I think, a popular guy on the team. But I do think his father is really the guy he's closest to, and it was his father who really taught him how to pitch. So
it's interesting to think about him growing up. I mean, not only in front of the public eye in terms of baseball, but what this guy will be like at 36 or 46.
That's right. Yeah, it is. It's I think if you pulled a random group of baseball fans, you would probably get a very different set of responses. I think there are still people out there who feel that it's just a matter of time before he starts to unravel. There are these kind of lingering questions about whether he has about his work ethic, whether he works out hard enough and is willing to work out hard enough. And of course, as you get older, that becomes more important. And I think that he did lose a lot of velocity off of his fastball last year, and that I think has given people pause as well. So I think there are some people who would say that it's it really is just a matter of time that before he begins to sort of slowly unravel. And then there are others who would say, this guy has just done nothing but succeed his entire life, and he's a great pitcher. And while his delivery looks a little bit unusual, it's actually quite sound, and it doesn't necessarily put undue pressure on any parts of his body that are of pitcher's body that are especially vulnerable to injury, so they would tell you he's going to be okay.
I mean,
and he's got a long, great career ahead of him.
Yeah, he does seem to have an interesting and positive temperament for a pitcher. I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about before, that he's known nothing but success. I mean, you even tell the story when he tried golf at one point, it just came
right.
So naturally. That in fact, even with all that success, when he confronted obstacles last year, he managed to get through them pretty well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He did. I mean, I think, in retrospect, I think we can say that. I think at the time, it was worrisome. I think for him and for certainly for Giants fans. I think for the most part you're right. I mean, I think once you start doubting yourself, particularly with pitchers, I mean, you can really go into a tailspin, and it can all start to come apart. And he did. He held it together.
You mentioned Seattle. He grew up around Seattle. He's living there now. What is his relationship or his feeling for San Francisco?
I mean, he clearly loves the city and feels attached to the city. I don't think it's home to him. I think Seattle really is home, but you know, he's obviously been so sort of warmly embraced there, and you know, it's pretty hard to sort of, you know, ignore the many ways in which he seems to be such a sort of a fitting icon for San Francisco that I think it works very well. I mean, it would be I can't help, you know, being from New York myself, I can't help but think about what it would be like if he were here. But certainly you have to imagine that, you know, his demeanor might not go over so well in other cities.
Why not?
Well, I think he's he's a laid-back dude, and I think that's you know, you put him in a certain city, I don't know, maybe a place like Boston or something,
mm-hmm.
And you would have, I mean, I think New York has a certain degree of kind of tolerance for its athletes, while they're enormously high expectations, but you know, people might not like the fact that he may not be training hard enough, that he may not be working out hard enough, that he doesn't seem to, that he seems to be approaching his job casually almost, which works for him, but and it would probably work for the fans of a particular city until it didn't, until he was going out there and giving up runs and losing games,
right.
And then I could see, you know, people in different cities being a little less tolerant of his approach.
Did you have a sense of the fact that the public persona is that he approaches it casually? Is that in fact how he approaches it, or is there a more serious side, a more serious way in which he takes baseball?
I mean, I think it really is his approach. I think he's, you know, he's not a guy who, he's not a great student of the game. He's not a guy who studies film, who looks at hitters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we watched a couple innings of a World Series game, of the last World Series game he and I did in his apartment, and you know, we talked about the game, and it wasn't like he ever, with each hitter who came to the plate, I would sort of try to draw him out a little, what were you thinking, and it's always, you know, it's not never a matter of, well, you know, these are the kinds of pitches that this guy tends to fall for, this is where I have to avoid putting the ball against him, and it was more just, you know, this is how I throw the ball, see if you can hit it. And so, you know, I do think that really is who he is. I mean, I think he's got a he just is a natural athlete, and it does come easily to him. I mean, I think his delivery was built very deliberately by his father over the years, but now it's just second nature to him, and he just gets out there and does it, and I think that really is who he is.
And finally, as other opportunities present themselves in the future, perhaps as to where he might play, how important is money going to be?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I certainly don't get the sense that he's a guy who he feels like he needs a lot of money. I mean, certainly, I'm accustomed to the New York real estate market, but you know, what he paid for this massive penthouse in Seattle, I think, was virtually nothing relative to New York. And he's not someone who basically spent the entire off season sitting around his apartment with some of his childhood friends playing video games and shooting pool. I mean, I don't think he's not globe trotting. He's not going out to nightclubs. He's not spending a lot of money. He bought his car, which is, you know, it's an expensive Mercedes, but he bought it used from one of his teammates. So I don't get the sense that he's someone who feels like he needs to be making any more money. So I would imagine, I guess, it's not going to be a major issue for him.
How do you think he would do in the media spotlight of New York?
You know, I think he would actually be fine in New York. I think he would perform here, because I think he has that kind of ice in his veins, and that attitude. I think he's just not intimidated. You know, whether and I think that as I said, I think New York would certainly embrace him, but then you have to, I think that a city like New York, then I think it might be they might sort of turn on him more quickly, say, than a city like San Francisco.
Jonathan Mahler, his article about Tim Lincecum, Little Big Man, is the cover story in the T Magazine and last Sunday's New York Times. Jonathan, I thank you so much, as always, for spending time with us.
My pleasure, Jeff. Nice to talk to you.